Welcome to the Buy Box Bandits podcast.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Buy Box Bandits podcast. Today we have a fantastic guest, a little newer to the Amazon social media scene than we typically have. We're excited to dive into his story. Corey Ganim, you said $4.3 million in mostly wholesale for 2022 and all that. So we're excited to dive into that, man. Thanks for joining us.
And shout out Chris Potter for the intro. Shout out Chris Potter.
Yeah. Shout out Chris Potter. And I appreciate you guys having me. Definitely looking forward to it.
Sweet. Cool, man. So you're a young guy like us. How'd you get into all this?
Yeah. So my story is definitely an interesting one. So when I was a senior in college, which would have been 2017, I had been studying abroad just for that month of January 2017. And so I was actually sitting in a hotel room in Vietnam, and I was graduating the upcoming May. And I had a job lined up that I would have to move to Chicago for that would start in July. So I basically had a 2 to 3 month gap between graduation and that job. And I'm not the really kind of person that can sit around and do a whole lot of nothing. So I'm sitting in my hotel room here in Vietnam, looking at YouTube videos, trying to get ideas for something just to do on the side in that three month gap that I had. And so I stumbled upon a Reezy Resells video. And keep in mind, this was January of 2017. I think he had like 5K subs at the time, maybe even less. And I think it was the one that says like 25 ways to make money online or something like that. And one of the methods was he was going to Marshall's, TJ Maxx, just the typical RA stores, scanning barcodes, comparing it to the pricing on Amazon, and then flipping it on Amazon. So for whatever reason, that just really struck a chord with me. I've always been interested in flipping, you know, just buying low, selling high, that type of stuff. So I was really excited about that business model to get started with that as soon as I graduated. So I think I graduated on May 20th. So on May 21st, I made my first rounds of, I actually started at thrift stores and started with used books because that was, I think, Reezy's original model. Did that for about 3 months, in the 3 months between that gap that I had, like I said, and then in July, I ended up moving to Chicago. And so in Chicago, I didn't have a car, so I couldn't really go around and do thrift stores or RA. So that's when I got into OA, and I want to say tactical arbitrage was still very new at the time. I think it had been out for a little bit, but it definitely was not what it is today. And there was still a small community around it. So I really started leveraging TA to do OA, and did OA up until January of 2019, which is when I stumbled upon Larry Lebarski's YouTube, Watch Me Amazon. And it was his video that he kind of breaks down the wholesale model, where he's like, hey, you know, you start with 2K in capital, you spend it all on profitable inventory, it comes back as 2,700. And then you take that 2,700 and you flip it into 3,500, so on and so forth. And that video was really eye-opening because I just saw the potential and the scalability. So I kind of pitched it to my dad and said, hey, if you throw in some seed money, we can go in as partners in this business. And so as of January 2019, we've been 100% wholesale really ever since.
Mm-hmm. So going on like 3.5, or I guess almost 4 years of mostly wholesale and everything. And then, so you said you started 2017 and then mostly wholesale since 2019. So you actually got into it pretty quick. And all that, was OA, like, was ungating an issue back in the day, or were you early enough to where it wasn't really a thing yet?
So, I mean, it was definitely an issue. I mean, it just depended on what you were selling, right? So doing OA, I was definitely doing a lot of toys. I was gated in a lot of the big toy brands. And I think it was you that tweeted recently that, like, I guess nowadays you can get ungated in Nike, yeah, with just a Nike much. Store.
Yeah,
receipt.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah, that was not a thing back in, I guess, when I was doing OA, like 2017, 2018, you had to have an invoice. Or, like, I don't know, I assume this is still a thing. You could just get auto approved by clicking request approval.
Yeah. But that's not gonna be like big ones though.
Well, I mean, dude, it was so weird because it was completely random who would get auto approved for which brands. Like there were sellers that made their account 2 weeks ago. This was back in 2017 that were posting in the Facebook groups, hey, I just got auto approved for Nike. And then there's guys that are doing like multiple 100K per month that aren't getting auto approved. So there didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason. And it just seemed that either you had to open a wholesale account just to get an invoice, just to get ungated and then go back to your OA, or just kind of roll with the brands that you were ungated in.
Do you remember the day you got ungated in Nike? Was that early on, or
I'm not? I'm gated in Nike.
I had a feeling you was gonna say that.
Yeah, we're gated in literally every major shoe brand. Like, we're
would auto that these days, honestly.
I haven't tried it, so I probably haven't tried it in like a year. But I would like very frequently. I would go in and just auto request like all the big brands, and I guess it wouldn't really make a huge difference for us now because we're not. Well, one, we're not really in that cat. We're not in like apparel or clothing, and two. Yeah. Yeah, that really probably wouldn't do a ton for us aside from maybe make our account a little more valuable. But I guess these days it's not that.
In like the Marshalls, TJ Maxx days, if you weren't selling Nike, what sorts of products were you looking for?
So I actually never did a whole lot of like Marshalls, TJ Maxx. When I was doing the RA, I only did RA for like, yeah, I only did RA for like 3 months, or I guess what you could call RA was pretty much like thrifting for books. And then I pretty much went straight from books from thrift stores to OA. And so when I was doing OA, like I said, it was a lot of toys. It was a lot of like some outdoor stuff. I was pretty much taking whatever I could get, and that it just, and a lot of grocery. Ended up getting ungated in grocery after a few months into OA, and ended up doing a lot of grocery after that.
And what type of capital did you plug into it back in 2019? Had you done like any credit loans or anything like that, or has it always just been a snowball?
So let's see. I think when I first started doing like the books and then the OA, I mean, I don't have a good record of it, but just off the top of my head, probably put in around like 5,000 total. And then in 2019, when we wanted to go into wholesale, when I pitched my dad on it, I think I put in 10K, he put in 10K. So we were all in for maybe like 25. And then a few months later, I think he put in 10 more. And so we basically started with 35K seed money. And like since then we've taken loans, we've got a line of credit and that type of stuff, but that's what we started with.
So, and something that I think will resonate with a lot of our viewers is kind of that entry process into wholesale, because Miles and I get DMs every single day about, oh, I've sent 20 emails and no one responded. I haven't opened up any accounts. What do I do now? Or I've sent 50, right? And so kind of walk us through those first couple accounts. Did you call them, email? What did those look like? How are you approaching it? How did you source the wholesale leads? Talk us through that entire entry process.
Yeah. So, and I guess just a caveat as well. So how I went about it then is not how I would go about it now. I would definitely do things a little differently. How I did it back then is, I remember, in fact, I just made a post about this on LinkedIn this week because our 4 year anniversary was 2 days ago. But we filed our articles with the state on January 9th, 2019. And then literally that day I started cold calling brands. So I just made a list of just brand direct accounts that we would like to have, right? Primarily using just Dylan Carter's reverse sourcing method. He was one of the first guys I ever watched, and watched him for years, really until he stopped putting out his content.
Yeah, great guy.
Dylan's a good dude.
Yeah, I don't know him personally, but he definitely seems like a good guy. And I know he's crushing it with Aura and Vendrive. But so I pretty much just, I made a big list of brands, called down the list. When I ran out, I added more. And if they didn't tell me no, I just followed up until they told me no or they told me yes. And to give you context as well, so we use Vendrive for the first probably 2 years in the business, and we have just under 3,000 suppliers in Vendrive. So I know I personally cold called probably 2,000 suppliers between brands and distributors, and my VAs have reached out to an additional probably 1,000.
And see, to everyone listening right now, that's what it takes. So when you send us DMs about, oh, I've reached out to 30, I've emailed 30 big brands and I haven't opened one account, well, you have to 10x that and then come back and talk to us.
And the other thing too, so like I said, when we, like that first day that I started, I was calling brands directly. If I could do it again, I would focus on distributors, because there's pros and cons to both. But the reason you want to start with distributors is because honestly, at the end of the day, all they care about is how much money are you going to spend with me, right? They might be like, some distributors are going to be more strenuous than others as far as who they open an account with. Like if you're not in the trade, or, you know, if they can tell you're just starting out, like if you're emailing them from a Gmail address, the chances of you getting that account are going to be smaller and smaller with each of those. But if you can call them up and say, hey, these are the specific brands we're interested in, some specific SKUs from those brands that we're interested in, and if we can get good pricing, this is the quantity we're committing to buy, then that's a much easier conversation. And now on the other hand, when you're approaching brands directly, any brand that's going to give you an account or give you a price list on the first interaction is not going to be a brand worth sourcing anyways. So the best brand accounts are going to come after, let me just put it this way. Our number one brand account, I had to follow up with for 3.5 years before we opened it. And it's our, within 90 days, it was our most profitable account. So really on the brand direct side, the longer it takes to open the account, the better, mm-hmm. because everyone else is quitting after the second, third, fifth follow-up, and you're following up 70 times if you have to.
Yeah, I mean, right, yeah. Like, just caring, you know, like volume of follow, like, dude, you guys correct me if I'm wrong. I've never heard someone say they can't get an account that's cold called 500 brands.
Oh, it's impossible. It's literally impossible.
Yeah, it doesn't. It does, even like 200, you know,
even 100, even yeah. 100. I was reading a book the other day that was like, it was like, if you're the worst salesman on the planet, if you pitch 100 people, one of them is going to buy. So, and the thing too is like, a lot of people are just afraid to pick up the phone, and you've got to realize these brands are getting, I swear to God, 100 emails per week from people just like you trying to do the exact same thing. Maybe 20% of those are actually picking up the phone, and of those 20%, 5% are following up for more than a month. Like, it's really not that hard to differentiate yourself, because I can't tell you how many accounts we've opened just because I've worn out the rep. Like, I've just called them so many times over the course of so many months. But they're finally like, all right, fine. Like, here's the price list. Here's what you can have.
And that's all, a lot of that follow-up and organizations done through Vendrive. Is it still done through Vendrive?
No. So we actually haven't used Vendrive in probably a year and a half or so. So we just use a simple Google Sheet now. And our outreach methods, I guess, have changed a little bit over the years. So our process is just a little different overall.
And so what's your outreach like nowadays? How many are you reaching out to a week? Are you reaching out consistently per week? What's that look like?
So we actually have not really consistently reached out to any new suppliers in probably at least a year. And so that's because we've got a couple hundred open accounts with distributors and brands. But, and this is very similar to what Javier said on a recent episode. He's like, yeah, we've got all these accounts, but we buy from like 8 to 10. And the same exact thing rings true for us. And that's really goes to show that's all it takes. So you get a few solid accounts, you don't really need to go that wide. It's the same thing with your ASIN portfolio. It's like, you can have 200 different SKUs, but it's a lot easier to have 50 really good SKUs. Let's put it that way.
Dude, you gotta have the VA go through this whole episode and transcribe all your little quotes and load them up into Tweet Hunter and just fire them up. Like, you're going to grow.
That's copyright.
with everything. Yeah, just be pumping all your quotes and such. And everything. Who does your prep?
So we use a 3PL. We use one primarily right now down in Savannah. We've got a relationship with one in New York. We actually haven't sent the one in New York anything. They're more of a backup. And then we've got one here at Winston-Salem, North Carolina. He's not really a prep center, but he runs essentially a big 3PL for massive brands. And he's kind of a personal friend of mine. So he does prep for one other Amazon seller. So he's kind of in our back pocket as well. We had so I guess to even back up even further, we started with a 10 by 10 storage unit and then went into a 20 by 10 storage unit and then two, I think 20 by 10 storage units. And this is me doing all the prep myself. Then got into a 2000 square foot warehouse, filled that up, and also realized that I suck at running a warehouse and it's not fun at all. And it's such a grind. So, and we actually had bought that warehouse. So we ended up selling it, somehow made a very small profit on it, and then outsourced completely to a 3PL. And that, when we outsourced to the 3PL is when we kind of broke that plateau, because then all we had to focus on was sourcing, which is, I think, our competitive advantage in the first place. And so then it just took the whole prep side out of the equation and just let us focus on what we're good at.
And so being that you're wholesale and using a prep center, is there like a minimum price point that you won't dip below? Right? Because I imagine it's pretty hard for small and light to kind of work out monetarily with a prep center, right?
Yeah. So we don't do a ton of small and light. We do a little bit of small and light, but those small and light SKUs, our suppliers are shipping directly to FBA. So
right.
We're kind of foregoing the prep fees. But to answer your question, is there a minimum price that we look to stay above? Not really. I know our model is definitely unique compared to other folks in wholesale, because our average sale price is $52. And pretty much every other person I know in wholesale, their average sale price is in the $15 to $25 range.
Yeah, that's
astronomically high compared to what I expected you. So I was planning on asking that. That it's a shame, man. Speaking of the supplier shipping directly to Amazon, there's a couple massive gurus on Instagram who have convinced a lot of the have not gotten into its space that these suppliers will just magically ship to Amazon for them, and you're not going to even. I've told like three people that like that doesn't exist. Like maybe one out of every few will, and you got to like teach them. Or if they will, then they probably aren't good because they know enough
about Amazon
in the first place and everything.
Again, and going back to Corey's point before, the suppliers and brands that are willingly like advertising that. Think about how many other sellers have been exposed to that same messaging. Think about how many other sellers have opened that same account. And those are the ones where there's just simply not going to be as much opportunity.
Right. Well, and the other thing too is like there are some that we have that kind of like you were saying, Miles, that you kind of got to coach them up on the, like they're open to doing it, but they've never done it before because, and again, it all comes down to how much money are you going to spend with them? If you're a 100K a month customer, then they're going to be a lot more open to sending your stuff directly to Amazon, especially when you pitch it like, hey, if you guys can ship this directly to Amazon on our behalf, it's going to cut our lead time down by 2 to 4 weeks. So we're going to be able to buy a lot more, a lot quicker. And so that 100K a month that we're spending with you today is realistically going to turn into 120 to 150K a month as soon as we start implementing this. And they're a lot more open to that conversation than, hey, I know we spent $500 with you this whole year. Can you ship this one case directly to Amazon? They're going to be like, no.
Yeah, it's such like it adds such complexity to it as well. If you're a small customer and and everything. And so in terms of the listener out there, a lot of people want to get into wholesale. In terms of you recommended distributors initially, where should they go about sourcing those? Should it be mainly just on Google, their local area, trade shows? What's kind of the vibe that you recommend with that?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of ways to go about it. Definitely the easiest way is just a Google search. And so I sent this tweet to somebody yesterday who asked the same question. And I would recommend you want to start category name, distributors, my city, right? And that's if you're in a decent sized city. So for example, lawn and garden distributor, Philadelphia. And if you're in a smaller city, maybe you want to look regional or maybe you want to look statewide. But the idea is you want to get all the local like distributors on your radar and then kind of move out from there. There are definitely a lot of national distributors that they might be located wherever, but they'll ship wherever too. But it's definitely easier to start with those regional guys because one, you can just show up and the relationship can be that much stronger.
Yeah. So
trade shows are big too.
Yeah. So mainly a familiarity thing and that you can meet them face to face. You have a common location wise. And then I assume a lot of it still they'll ship to you. It's just as much cheaper for them to deliver stuff like that.
So what do you mean exactly? It's much cheaper for them to deliver
like the prep center or is like, are you going and picking up item locally, stuff like that?
Oh, I see. Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty much two models when dealing with a distributor. Either they're going to ship directly to Amazon on our behalf or they're going to ship to the 3PL. And so, yeah, I haven't seen inventory in a number of years. So it's one or the other.
Cool. And you just trust the prep center obviously really well in terms of quality control and stuff. Cause that's something a lot of people struggle with, just kind of giving up that control, myself included.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, pros and cons to using a prep center like anything. I mean, I will say it took us like a year to really hammer out details with our current prep center because of our model. I mean, we're testing so many different SKUs, a lot of different bundles, a lot of different multi-packs. And I cannot tell you how often you order. Let's say it's a two component bundle and you order 20 of each component and then 15 of one component comes in and 10 of the other comes in. So it's like one, there's a shortage and two, there's a mismatch. So the prep center is like, what do you want us to do with these? It can be a nightmare. And it is a nightmare a lot of the time, but you've just got to have really good systems in place to one, keep the prep center accountable and two, keep you accountable for managing them appropriately.
And then, so just in real life or when people come to you, it's going to be a lot on Twitter, people come to you and ask, how do I get started? Do you recommend arbitrage to start? Or do you recommend someone go straight to wholesale?
So I think that there's benefits to both. I personally would probably recommend retail arbitrage to start. And so the reason for that is because you learn Amazon, you learn the fee structures, you learn how to prep and ship a product. That's that's an issue I have with a lot of these courses and these gurus, is they're just teaching either drop shipping or, you know, direct FBA. But there is so much value in doing prep yourself for even a short amount of time until you understand how it works. Because if you don't understand the prep process and you outsource that right off the bat, then things could be slipping through the cracks and you're not even aware because you just don't know what you don't know. So I would recommend retail arbitrage to get your feet wet, get a little sales on Amazon through that. And then I would recommend going straight into wholesale, because in my opinion, wholesale is just a more scalable online arbitrage. Again, pros and cons to both models, but I would say wholesale, having done both, wholesale all the way as soon as you get your feet wet.
Yeah, and RA just allows you to compound that dollar so much quicker in the beginning. Right. Starting to kind of transition to the social media aspect of Amazon, and you had kind of walked us through your 2023 social media game plan offline, but walk the listener through in terms of LinkedIn, Twitter, your whole mantra for 2023. Let's hear it.
Yeah, so one of my big goals for 2023 is to get a lot more active on LinkedIn in particular. And so the reason for that is right now, I would say 90 to 95% of our products are coming from distributors and only about 5% are coming directly from brands. And in my opinion, and I think in a lot of other people's opinions, my business, if I went to sell it today, I couldn't, it's not, there's no asset to sell, right? It's simply a cash flow business. The only way my business is going to have real value as an asset is if we have exclusive deals directly with brands, and not just handshake deals, but on paper contracts for a period of time. So my game plan going into this year, as far as social media is concerned, is to one, focus on a niche, which for us, we've chosen as tool and automotive supplier or tool and automotive brands. And really on LinkedIn in particular, craft content that's relevant to decision makers at those brands that would entice them to reach out to us and say, hey, we're trying to do XYZ on Amazon. I can tell you specialize in our type of company. Let's talk. And then our goal being to, one, just get that wholesale account with the brand initially, and then deepen that relationship and ideally parlay that into an exclusive down the line. So that's the goal behind LinkedIn. Really looking at LinkedIn as more of a lead gen magnet for brand direct accounts. When it comes to Twitter, like I was telling you guys right before this call, I just started tweeting within the last week. I just didn't realize how big the Amazon community was on the platform. So my goal with Twitter is to grow my seller network, right? People like you guys, other people in the space. So LinkedIn's more of lead gen for the business. Twitter's more of networking with people in the community.
Yeah. And
yeah, and even this podcast is a good start to grow your Twitter audience. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of
follow them. Yeah. It'll be in the description for sure. All that stuff and everything. And then how do you think, like, where are you just in terms of like formulating that so other people can help get wholesale accounts? How are you positioning yourself, and that what's the value add? Why should a brand work with you?
Yeah. So, and that's a good question. So keep in mind, like I said earlier, these brands are getting hit up by sometimes hundreds of sellers per week. And that's depending on the strength of the brand. And so our value add is going to be like, one, we didn't just take some course and start in this business yesterday, right? We've been around the block for a number of years now. We get the platform and we know what drives sales. And so the brands that we're reaching out to are brands that where there's a lot of low-hanging fruit in terms of, for example, their best listing is selling 500 units a month, but it's got one picture and that picture is grainy. Like you really can't even tell what the product is. And then not to mention, they've got three bullet points that are 50 characters each and no A+ content whatsoever because they're not brand registered. So it's essentially taking all that lost potential and packaging that in a way that convinces the brand that, hey, if you make these tweaks, which we can do on our end, we're willing to do this for free just for the ability to sell your product. So it's like, one, not only are we not charging you anything, we're paying you for the opportunity to sell your products. And we're also going to optimize your entire presence at our cost in order for the ability to do that. And so again, the idea is prove to them how good of a job we can do on say one or three of their best SKUs to start. And then if they like what they see, then expanding that out to the rest of their product line, you know, as they see fit.
And do you guys do any PPC on your product currently?
So we only run PPC on the SKUs that we're exclusive on, and which is only a handful. So because, I mean, I get that even if we're sharing the buy box, like our PPC is only going to run when we're in the buy box. But at the same time, that's another pitch to the brand. It's like, listen, if I'm competing with 12 other people, I'm not going to pour my limited marketing budget into PPC on your product when I've got brands out here that trust us, that know that we're going to do a good job, that, you know, that I promise I'm going to spend on their brand. So it's just a give and take, and you've got to be able to prove your value to kind of warrant that.
Yeah. And then just in terms of structure, I know you'd mentioned virtual assistants and such. Do you have any domestic employees, or is it just you and then the crew in some other countries?
So just me in the US. And then we've got, right now we've got 4 full-time VAs. I think the most we had at one time was 6. And then, but much leaner and much more efficient with 4. I've had the shortest tenured VA that we have has been with me for, I think, a year and a half. And then the longest tenured one has been with me for over 3 years. And they're just an absolute wrecking crew. I mean, I cannot speak highly enough of them.
And so talk us through that. Do you have one of them kind of supervises the other one, the other ones? What sort of tasks do they do?
Yeah, so as far as the breakdown, so I've got my head one, but she's essentially my right hand. She does a lot of, well, I'll get into her role specifically, but I'll break down the team first. So I've got my head VA, she's my right hand. We've got 2 doing sourcing full time. So literally 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, they are deep in supplier catalog, supplier price list, looking for new products to buy. And then the 4th VA is an admin. So she is doing a lot of running my schedule, filtering my email, doing everything Seller Central related, answering customer questions, managing the repricer, like anything that is just an admin repeatable task is something that she's taking care of.
So you're making the final decisions in terms like purchase orders and all that?
So sometimes I am, but there are, so we basically have a system set up where my head VA is the filter. So that we've got the 2 sourcing VAs who are finding products. And so their KPIs, they need to find, they're responsible for finding 8 viable product leads per week each. So in total, 16 new SKUs per week. And so of those 16 SKUs, my head VA is going and filtering those down and just saying like, all right, you know, based on these trends or based on what I'm seeing of these 16, we're going to purchase, let's just say 10. And so from that 10, she essentially has authority to pull the trigger on POs up to a certain dollar amount herself. And then anything above that dollar amount goes to me for approval, because we use a purchase order management software called Procurement Express. And PCX lets you set a budget where, you know, if anything is above that threshold that we set for the purchasing VA, it goes to me for approval. I look it over, I one-click approve, and then she handles everything from the purchasing to if the supplier is shipping directly to Amazon, she sends them the labels, manages the shipment, schedules the pickup, everything.
Yeah, the in-person assistant came to check out the interview there as well.
Yeah, sorry, my dog, he's a
no, you're good. Phone charger.
What's the most you've ever spent on one ASIN?
And like in one PO or in a year?
Lifetime.
I think you asked Javier.
Or one PO as well, yeah.
So there was one, let's see, a PO that we did going into Q4. We did, I think it was 110K total into 2 SKUs. So I think like 80 into one, or no, like 70 into one, 30 into another. And so that one SKU that we went 70 into, I mean, over the course of last year, we probably spent like 200, 250 on that one. And that was, I mean, we've been selling that one for like a year and a half.
Yeah, because I've done like approaching 4 million lifetime, and like one item is like 10% of that.
Yeah, well, but that's the thing, is like most of these websites, they don't want you buying from them for resale. So that's why I like wholesale so much more, because in OA, it's like you have to get away with buying 100. But when you're buying from a distributor, they say, here's 100. Do you want 1,000 more? It's just a completely different conversation.
Yeah, that was a good way to put it. What are some common mistakes you see wholesale sellers make?
I would say, and we were guilty of this last year, which is why we're making some changes. And I think probably the number one mistake you can make is just focusing on top line and losing sight of margin and kind of letting costs get out of control. Because I will tell you, we did more. So we made slightly more profit in 2021 than we did in 2022. And in 2022, we did, I think, 1.1 million in additional revenue. So it's like that 1.1 million in additional revenue made us no profit. And so that was very eye-opening, in that we kind of started to chase the top line. And, you know, everybody wants to show those those sales graphs and those big numbers, but at the end of the day, that's nothing. I'm just not convinced that you should be focusing on anything other than margin.
And so what was, first of all, what margin is your ideal percentage to operate at?
Yeah, so we shoot for we're pretty much pulling the trigger on a 10% gross margin is our threshold. And now that's with exceptions. So there is some stuff that's super high volume. It's maybe 7-8% that we're willing to go with, but minimum threshold, typically 10% gross. And our goal for this year is to be operating at 20% gross on the year.
Oh, wow. And so back in 2022, what were some of those areas where you saw that leakage, where the fees were adding up, expenses were adding up? What do you attribute that 1.1 extra million in revenue to, but not necessarily much in profit?
Yeah. So again, I mean, we were chasing revenue. I mean, there was some SKUs that we went deep on.
Oh, so it was mainly sourcing related?
Yeah. So it was sourcing related, and it was also some expenses too. I mean, there was some software that we had been paying for forever that we didn't need. It's just a lot of little things that can add up, you know? And so that's, especially when you get into some of the bigger numbers, it's like, oh, this software, it's, you know, it doesn't mean that much at the end of the day, but over the course of the year, it's like, oh, I just spent X amount on the software that I haven't touched. And some of it was sourcing related too. And one sourcing mistake in particular that really hurt us was there was one SKU, very high cost SKU, that we had been selling for like a year and a half. And the manufacturer has a MAP price set, which for some people that, I guess some listeners might not know what that is. It stands for minimum advertised price. So it's essentially the manufacturer does not let you sell under that price to keep their brand integrity intact. So I think we were paying $148 for this ASIN, and we were selling it for $200 for like a year and a half. And then we went, I want to say like $80,000 into the SKU going into like middle of last year, because it had been so profitable, it had been moving so well for us. Literally the day after we paid for it, the manufacturer removes the MAP price, and the Amazon price falls to -$10 profit per unit, like within a week. So we had to not only eat essentially that whole 80, but then we lost money on top of it. So there's, you know, I thought it was a calculated risk, but obviously it didn't pay out, but we learned from it.
Yeah, for sure. How, in an ideal situation, what would the operation look like differently a year from now?
So a year from now, we would be buying a lot more directly from brands. Like I said, I think right now we're like 95-5 as far as 95% distributors, 5% brands. I'd like to see that shift as far in the other direction as possible. And so I can't give you what that number is going to look like, but I will tell you that we're starting to reach out to 5 new brands per day starting this coming week. And so I think that if we consistently hit that number, then we're going to be, then I think that number can shift a good bit. And also just keeping expenses in line, really being more frugal with certain purchases, and also just being more disciplined with our sourcing.
And you said you at least went into the business with your dad. Does he still play a role in the business?
Yeah, so he's still an owner, but he's a silent partner. So that was kind of the intention up front is, hey, I'll put in seed money if you run it. And that's been the case all along.
Sweet. And were you an entrepreneurial kid at all? Or did you have any sort of tendencies?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, my dad has been a business owner for 31 years. So I kind of grew up in the environment. And always just lemonade stands, flipping random stuff. Like, yeah, always something.
Same. In terms of I was doing all types of stuff like that as well and everything. And we didn't bring this up just for the banter. We love how you have the Rocket logo for your company as well. I don't know.
Oh yeah,
the Buy Box Bandits logo, but we have the Rocket flying through as well.
Oh no, I didn't even make that connection. But yeah, that's pretty funny.
That's good stuff. And all that and such. So yeah, we got to get you ripping some Twitter threads and stuff. I can help you formulate some things, and then you can probably get 1,000 followers pretty quick and such with,
yeah, definitely.
And then, yeah. So without having had too much of a social media presence prior, had you had success? Like, do you have other friends that are really deep in this space, or did you kind of do it on your own mostly? Cause it's much harder, the latter, but you've clearly been successful regardless. And I don't know the details of it.
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that because I was thinking about this morning. So I would say up until about 6 months ago, I could count on one hand the amount of other full-time Amazon sellers that I knew. I mean, I really knew nobody in the space. And so because of that, you can grow, but your growth is limited, because I know that in the last 6 months, I've really made a concerted effort to network with other people in the space. And I mean, that, like, the connections I made and the knowledge I've gained from some of these guys that are at just such a higher level than us has been completely invaluable. And I swear, I think that is the game changer in your business, is going to be meeting people that are at a higher level. And I know we briefly discussed MDS, but so MDS is a group, it's called Million Dollar Sellers. And I joined that back in, I think, late August or sometime around then. And I mean, that's been game changer too, because everybody in that group is legit and they just elevate you to a higher level.
It's funny. I think Miles and I, and a lot of people that we talk to, are on the completely other end of the spectrum. Like, of my probably three best friends, two of them are heavy, heavy Amazon sellers. And out of like the seven.
Yeah. My 10, probably the 20 people I talk to the most, mom, dad, grandma, online business people. Like,
see, I wish that was the case. I mean, I feel like if
adapted to Amazon, and like the friends we talk to, the people we hang out with, yeah. Like Miles and I are obviously in Pennsylvania. We have 10 sellers coming to hang out with us this weekend.
That's tomorrow.
And they're coming in tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's awesome. And that's going to help. I mean, you guys are growing a lot faster than I grew at the start. And I think that the network and like the group that you guys associate with has everything to do with that. So keep associating with people like that and you'll blow us out of the water in the same amount of time.
And the other thing is, and Miles talks about this to no end, right? OA is sort of like a group effort, right? Once you have a group of homies that don't hold anything back, that are just willing to work and create that synergy amongst the group, then it's just a matter of, you know, contributing and putting fuel on the fire inside the group. And once you have 6-7 people that are all doing that, all contributing to that goal, then from an OA perspective, it's just light. You grow light years ahead of what you would have.
Completely agreed. And it just comes down to having that abundance mentality as opposed to the scarcity mentality. I mean, I can tell you how many people I've, unfortunately, that I've heard from that are just, you know, either afraid to share. Like, there's some stuff you don't share, right? Like, I'm not going to give somebody my suppliers, but there is some stuff that maybe newer people think wouldn't be appropriate to share. But then the high level guys, like, that's all they're talking about. So yeah, it comes down to knowing that there's enough for everybody, and getting in the room with like-minded people is going to change everything. Really.
There's that meme where it's like the bozo and then like the middle guy and then like the really advanced one, and in Amazon the bozo's like, I tell everyone everything. The guy, right. The guy in the middle is like, oh, I would never tell anyone, I don't want to saturate my market, I can't have people getting other opportunities that I get. And then the advanced guy's like, I tell everyone everything.
And that's the thing too, is like, I can't tell you how many people have asked me, like, oh, is it saturated, like, is it too late to start? I'm like, dude, it will never be saturated. And I'm convinced that there's no such thing as a saturated industry, because at the end of the day, especially when it comes to Amazon, but when it comes to any business or any vertical, it's like, there's only a small percentage of people that are doing it at a high level anyways. And so no matter how many people join kind of at the bottom level, they're just going to keep funneling out. And there's just still going to be just a small amount of people kind of at the higher levels. And there's always room there. So that's my perspective on Amazon, especially.
Yeah, I mean, that bodes so true with Amazon, right? Because it's the barrier of entry to make an account is so low, right? But
like, that's why the courses are abundant.
But the thing is, the percentage of those people who last 6-8 months and actually do some significant numbers is so small.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so Larry Lebarski's made this point. I've heard him make this point on multiple, I guess, interviews or podcasts. He's like, you don't really meet anybody that's been consistently selling on Amazon for more than 2 years that isn't doing at least decent. Like, it's one of those things where if you stick with it for even like, with all the information that's out there now and all the connections you can make and Twitter and everywhere, it's like, if you just go hard for a year, you can absolutely be in a different place. And I mean, yeah, that's not to mention when you stick with it for 2, 3, 5 years, like, it's just, it can be life changing.
And it's interesting the way society is conditioned and that college is 4 years long. You know, and that, like, it's, people think it's crazy to not succeed with this for 6 months. Like, it's completely unreasonable. And sure, it happens, you know, different things. But to have like massive success in an industry where there's no formal education, where you had nothing prior that conditioned you for it pretty quick, right? And sure, it happens from time to time, but it only happens with full, complete balls deep immersion, the way all of us did from the beginning, right? And right. We got these DMs like, oh, how much time does it take? Like,
yeah,
that's just
wrong question.
A horrible way to think.
Anybody
about
that's asking that question is not cut out. That's
yeah, right.
Or how quickly can I make X amount in Amazon?
Yeah. Like no one who actually makes money quick asked that to begin with. You have to read the way you think about stuff, in my opinion.
I completely agree. Totally agreed.
Yeah, for sure. Anything else we want to jam on, Garrett?
Man, this was a fire episode. We're definitely going to have to
get
him on again at some point.
Yeah, thank you, man. Absolutely. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so people can find me on Twitter. So my Twitter is my last name, then my first name, which is Ganem, G-A-N as in Nancy, I-M as in Mary, Corey, C-O-R-E-Y. And then you can also find me on LinkedIn. So on LinkedIn, I'm just Corey Ganem. And definitely looking to connect with more people in the community on Twitter. And then feel free to add me on LinkedIn too.
Yeah, let's see. Let's see if the BBB army, let's see. Let's get a follower read right here. Okay. All right, you got 10.
I think I have 10.
Yeah. I think I'll help you write a good thread or two, like a good hook. And I think we can get you to 200 plus within a week of the episode dropping. So everyone go follow him on there. Spit some game and some wholesale stuff on everything. But for real, man, thank you. It was great connecting. And thanks to Chris. Chris, if you're listening to this, for connecting us as well. It's fantastic. We're excited to get to know you further and see you on the timeline and such.
Yeah. Like I said, guys, thanks so much for having me. I had a great time.
Sweet. Cool. Thanks, all right. Man. Thanks everyone for listening. And we'll see you guys. Actually, in this case, it'll be tomorrow for another episode. We've been going hard lately and such. Take it easy, everyone.